Hello, you're listening to Sordid Cinema, the official podcast of Goomba Stomp and Sordid Cinema. This week, we are taking a look at Patty Jenkins' highly anticipated Wonder Woman with the help of special guest Mariko McDonald.
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hello and welcome to Sordid Cinema. My name is Simon Howell. I'm joined as always by Mr. Ricky D.
Man, Simon, God, like, what is wrong with our podcast? Like, for our listeners, peek behind the curtains. Technical problems once again, but we are here and we are ready to review, talk about, discuss Wonder Woman. And we have a special guest, so I'm excited.
Well, hold on. We get to the special guest last. As always, we've also got Patrick Murphy.
I'm neither special nor a guest, so, you know, none of the...
Yeah, exactly. You got to get that. You know, it's always the penultimate thing that's the least special. However, we do have someone special, and that's Mariko McDonald.
Hello.
For anyone who's not aware, Mariko was a regular co-host a very, very long time ago. And I think we all just feel old with me even just saying that. And Mariko, I was asking you during the break if you had anything to plug, and then you were like, oh, I'm in a documentary. And this is where I get to ask you about that, because what the hell?
Yes, my lovely friend Gina Hara made a film called Geek Girls, and I, along with a plethora of amazing ladies, are interviewed in it, and it just had its world premiere at the Sheffield Documentary Film Festival, and hopefully more screenings to come through the summer and fall.
Fantastic. So... Ricky was talking about technical difficulties earlier. I wanted to speak a little bit more to that, just so viewers can get a sense of what's going on. I just moved. I don't even have a bed yet. I'm sleeping on the floor tonight, and I did last night. I do not have an Amazonian physique, so it's not going well. The internet's been cutting out, and everyone's really stressed. Ricky, you're going to California very shortly. It's a lot going on. But we hope to deliver an acceptable show. But you know what? We're not big on, you know, preamble here. So let's just do it. Let's hear a clip from Patty Jenkins's long-awaited adaptation of DC Comics' Wonder Woman.
Please slow down, Diana.
That's your leader? How could he say that? Believe that? And you, was your duty to simply give them a book?
No.
You didn't stand your ground. Yeah, you didn't fight.
Because there was no chance of changing his mind.
This is Ares, and he's not going to allow a negotiation or a surrender. The millions of people you talked about, they will die.
We are going anyway.
You mean you were lying?
I'm a spy. That's what I do.
How do I know you're not lying to me right now?
I am taking you to the front. We are probably gonna die. This is a terrible idea. We're gonna need reinforcements.
That was a clip from Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins, written by Alan Heinberg, from the character, of course, of the same name, created by who, everyone? Someone's got
Marshall
this.
Something Marshall.
William Moulton Marston. I thought you were a geek girl, Mariko.
I actually knew the answer, but my microphone was on mute for some reason.
I knew there were three names. I knew there was an M in there. I mostly know about the fact that he invented the first patent for the lie detector test.
Yeah, he actually based Wonder Woman on early feminist writings, of which he just loved. So that's where the character came from, which sort of makes sense.
Oh, yeah. No, he truly believed that the world would be a 100% better place if women took over everything. He wasn't just like a feminist. He literally thought women were better than men and should be in charge of everything.
I guess we can get to that in a minute. But for now,
he was really S&M and polyamory.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah. We can talk about how much of that made it into this movie a little bit later. For now, for the uninitiated, this does star Gal Gadot. And yes, we did look it up. And yes, that is roughly how it's pronounced. The T is not silent. We are not assholes, I promise you. Well, not for that reason. And she stars as the Princess of Themyscira, a.k.a. Themyscira. Simply Diana Prince. That's just... Sorry, what now?
You got the name wrong, Simon.
We did.
Wait, what did I say?
You said something that sounded like an STD.
Whatever. It's the place. The place that you can't go unless you're an Amazonian.
She's not an Amazonian woman.
Amazon warrior, whatever. Sorry, I'm getting the Amazon from our last show mixed up with the Amazon in this very the different film. Wow, here. We were just totally. We've already made total chopped liver of this. Anyway, so I mean, I might as well start with you, Mariko, since you're a guest of honor and a self-professed geek girl. I mean, this has been widely discussed for a very long time. The fact that between Marvel and DC, in recent years, I know, Ricky, there are exceptions, and we'll get to those. But in the since the Marvel Cinematic Universe has started to be built, and comic books and geek culture in general have gone so mainstream. There still has not been a superhero movie top-lined by a female character, nor with a female director. And we get both. So I guess my question is two-pronged. One, how important are both of those things to you generally? And two, does this movie merit sort of a matched level of excitement?
Yes and yes. So... I guess to kind of start off, I'll explain my experience of watching this film for the first time, which was actually in the context of a Geek Girl Brunch Montreal event that I co-hosted, where we went for brunch and all went, giant gang of us, all wearing our Wonder Woman t-shirts, boots, hair scarves, whatever. We all sat together. We all cheered like idiots every time she did something awesome. Especially that first scene on Themyscira where we see all like the warriors training. I was just like, you could feel the vibrations in the room of like this row of all of us girls, seeing these amazing athletic women just being amazing and looking great doing it.
Wait, this was in Montreal?
Yeah.
And you didn't invite me? Was it like an all women's thing or like, yeah, was it kind of like the Alamo Draft House where only women can get in?
Well, I mean, the screening was open to anybody, but the event that I was organizing was for Geek Girl Brunch, which is a, I guess the way that we usually like to say it is it's a non-dude club. Okay. So it's a safe space for, you know, non-binary and women people to geek out and find other geeks to hang out with. And so we have events where we go and we do things and we see movies, we have themes, and that was the context in which I saw this. So cool. It was already everyone at the table at brunch, like the waitress came over and was like, so which screening of Wonder Woman are you guys going to see? Because we were just so obviously why we were there.
Wait, Mariko, so you have a film club and men can't go? What's wrong with you? No, I'm just kidding. Nobody here gives a shit. It's a stupid controversy. We're not going to talk about it.
Can I just say something quickly about the controversy? Okay, the Alamo Draft House did it completely wrong. What they should have done was they should have had a dress code, because they can't get sued for a dress code. Everybody has dress codes. And then the dress code would be like, if you want to go see it a movie, you have to dress like a woman and or like Wonder Woman. And then all these dudes who are complaining and bitching and the people who are suing, they could have at least gone, but they would have to dress like women. And guaranteed they would not, because they're all a bunch of assholes.
No, they would still bitch about it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't win.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I don't know, man. I would love to go to
Well, I think that would be amazing. Like, one of my favorite things ever is when dads cosplay as princesses and, like, let their daughters be, like, the hero. Like, the guy who who dressed up like the slave Leia thing, and you know, his daughter went as Han. It was big hairy belly. It was so great. It was just lovely.
That sounds pretty cool, but I don't think I would look good as a woman. But if I did, I would totally dress like Wonder Woman, I think.
I think you have pretty good legs. You're athletic.
I got good legs, yeah.
Yeah.
I like my legs. Anyhow, how did you like the movie?
It is what it is. It's a giant blockbuster. There were bits of the CG that I wasn't the biggest fan of, but I don't know if that was just like the CG or the type of effect that they were doing. I'm speaking specifically of when she leaps up into the air. And I don't know why, but for some reason, the model looked kind of flimsy to me. It wasn't very satisfying. But pretty much everything else in the movie was extremely satisfying. You know, obviously, I went into this very dubious because, you know, superhero movies are really easy to F up, especially because there didn't seem to be a lot of marketing for this, not at least on the level of like, you know, a Superman Returns or Batman versus Superman or that kind of thing. It wasn't anywhere near on that level. And so a lot of people, you know, it was very easy to say like, okay, everything else so far in the DC cinematic U has been utter poo-poo. Why are we supposed to believe this is going to be any different? And I honestly believe that that's part of why they ended up making a decent movie, is because the studio didn't really have any actual high hopes for it and let them kind of do their own thing. And, you know, it ends up being a very, very simple story. It wasn't overly convoluted. The themes are also very, very simple and accessible. It's a fantastic movie for kids. And I was really satisfied by it.
As long as we're talking about circumstances surrounding viewership, I'm going to say a couple of things that I was thinking that are not, they can't be leveled against the movie in any way because they're not part of the text of the film. But, you know, sometimes things happen and, or you learn things and they color your experience of watching a movie and you can't escape it. So I just wanted to mention those things because they might make me an unreliable reviewer. ever since I learned that Steve Mnuchin, who's Trump's Secretary of the Treasury, is one of the producers over at DC Films, I haven't been able to escape the fact in my head that every time I go see one of these movies, I'm lining the Trump administration's pockets. I haven't been able to get it out of my head. It's, again, not part of the movie, but just, you know, it was in there, lodged back there somewhere. Similarly, I kept thinking about Gal Gadot's stint as a combat trainer in the IDF, also throughout this movie, which is incidentally why this movie is banned in Lebanon. But again, not something we're going to talk about today, just something that was in the back of my mind, eerily, creepily, as I was watching for a variety of reasons. All right, I'm leaving that behind me now.
Granted, every Israeli is required to join the IDF, so she didn't have too much of a choice as far as joining up.
No, although she has also, you know, sent out pro-IDF statements elsewhere. Anyway, we're not here for a discussion of the ethics of the IDF today. That would be for a totally different podcast, and I'm not qualified. That being said, anyone who's heard the podcast before knows I'm not a superhero movie person. I'm not a self-professed geek. I'm nerdy about film, but I have no attachment to comic book culture, superhero culture at all. I haven't been a fan of any DC superhero films. I generally am. I feel lukewarm towards Marvel superhero films.
Wait a minute. Dark Knight. What? You like The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight, yeah, I mean, at the time, yeah, but I wouldn't consider, like, I mean, like, since they've been trying to build a universe, like, I would say when Zack Snyder came on with Man of Steel is when I sort of consider the DC universe starting, if that makes
sense.
That's
very true. The Dark Knight has nothing to do with these movies. It has absolutely nothing to do with these anymore. That's a completely different Batman, a completely different world that they're inhabiting. They bear no resemblance to each other.
Yeah, plus Dark Knight Returns wasn't very good.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Terrible.
Terrible.
So, anyway. So I had to, sorry for all the, sorry for all the, you know, laying ground.
I'm 20 minutes into the podcast and you still have not told us if you like the movie or not.
I know. There are things I liked about it, which is like probably the most charitable reading it was going to get from me anyway. I think that the first really the opening of the movie, like the whole section on Island of Thermopylae or whatever
the
it's called.
The Mascara.
I'll get it one day. Anyway, is surprisingly sort of bright and colorful and humane and just not what you're expecting out of a DC Universe film movie at all.
There's a sense of humor!
It was great, and, you know, there is an actual sense of humor, and there's bright colors and detectable, like, human people walking around in the background and not just, you know, CGI vistas. And then Chris Pine shows up, and it's actually quite funny and charming. And then we get to London, and then it gets problematic for me, and then it just sort of gets more and more problematic as it goes on. I think there's like potential for a good movie here. I mean, I think that a much more human scale Wonder Woman movie that continued to center her consistently, which this movie doesn't really do. It's deliberately following Pine and these other characters around quite specifically as it's entering, you know, the world of men, specifically the world of World War One, which is of course entirely made up of men. On the combat side, anyway. You know, it's Jenkins and the screenwriter choose to go that way, which is fine. That's their prerogative, but that's sort of when I lost sight of the things that I was actually enjoying about the film. I found the action sequences pretty perfunctory for the most part and very long, particularly the sequence in the middle. And obviously, well, I mean, we'll get to the climax, I'm sure, at some point. I actually didn't find it thematically all that simple or streamlined in any way. It sort of started out that way. And then as it's trying to make this grand statement about the nature of humans and the nature of war and whether or not humanity is worth saving, which is of course the theme of like every major superhero film, it seems. Again, I felt like I was losing sight of sort of the individual human qualities that although I know she's not technically human, that I was really enjoying in the first part of the film. So yeah, I don't know. It started out with promise for me, but kind of ended up in the usual place. But again, I'm not going to completely, I didn't completely hate it, which again, for me is like
that's kind of where I'm at, Simon. I think you pretty much took almost everything that I was going to say about this. I really liked its earnestness. There was a charm to that, but in the end it's ideologically a complete mess. I mean, it's preaching love and, you know, sort of a pacifist view on things. And yet Wonder Woman is murdering people left and right. She's killing German soldiers like they were Nazis. And these Germans, like, they were made out to be essentially Nazis. It doesn't even bother with the politics of World War One. If I'm not mistaken, Wonder Woman was like Superman. She didn't kill, like Batman, too. The three of them never killed in the comics, from what I understand.
It kind of goes back and forth, yeah, depending on which iteration of the character. These days, she's basically the Thor of the DC universe.
I got that impression from the first third of the movie, which was the best part. I kind of felt like a Ray Harryhausen skeleton should walk out at some point and she should fight it. It had this sort of throwback fun. And the effects were bad, but they were kind of charmingly bad, as opposed to the you know, some of the stuff in Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever, where it just turns into a video game. These were sort of, I could have swore they were using rear projection at one point, which was hilarious to me and kind of charming. But yeah, once they go to London, the whole thing turns dingy again, just like the other DC comic book, you know, universe movies. And I just thought it kind of went off the map, and they lost sight of Wonder Woman as a character, and sort of everything revolved around Chris Pine. And Rick, I was having a little discussion with you on Slack about this. I had this feeling during the conversations, you know, there's the shot reverse shot in conversations, that they were focusing on Pine more than they were focusing on Wonder Woman. And he really had the satisfying arc in the movie as far as his character growth, where she sort of played off of him and reacted to things he did. In fact, in the end, you could argue that he basically awoke her in a way. But she was kind of like, I thought she was kind of like Starman. She was this alien that came to the human planet, and Chris Pine was Karen Allen that was sort of teaching her the ways of things and had his own agenda as well. And it didn't make for her to be the most interesting character. I didn't feel like they trusted her enough to be the interesting character that she could have been. And instead, she was just sort of this thing that was learning human customs.
I was okay with that because, you know, this is an origin story. And I liked how much they played on how very naive she is and how it's charming at first, but, you know, towards the end of the film, like, you know, I guess it would have to be a man to awaken her, like, okay, problematic, whatever.
But the thing is, like, okay, so you can compare this with Captain America, right? The first Captain America, these sort of have similar settings and sort of a similar...
Yeah, their characters are similar. Which is probably why I enjoyed it so much.
Right, and yet he didn't have somebody else. It wasn't like, you know, his buddy gave him his true inner strength or something like that. They were able to focus that movie more around the character of Captain America. And in this one, it kind of... She was just one of the pack. You know, they sort of formed their little Avengers-type group, and she was just one of them. And in the end, yes, yeah, she was the most powerful one, but everything didn't always necessarily revolve around her.
That didn't really bother me. Just the way that she's kind of positioned in the film, like, yeah, she's a person, but she's also kind of just a blunt instrument that they can point at things. And at that point in the movie, that's kind of what she was doing in it. It worked, but they still gave her some really nice moments, like the liberation of the village and, you know, even her confrontation with the colonel guy. I really like the way those bits played out. I thought they gave her some really nice little bits of an emotional arc to play with that I really liked.
So here's the thing. So I've been trolling everyone over the past like few days online on Facebook and on Slack. I really like this movie, guys. And I get what you're saying, Patrick, but I think, and you too, Simon, but I think the reasons why you guys think it's problematic is why I admire this movie so much. And like, I think that's the word I'm going to use throughout this whole entire show is admire. Like, I'm not in love with the movie, but I do really like it and I admire it for what it is. I'm happy this movie exists. I'm happy it is a success. I'm happy that it's made over like $250 million worldwide. I'm happy we're getting a sequel. I'm happy Patty Jenkins is directing the sequel because I'm pretty sure the sequel is going to be 10 times better than this movie. My problem with this movie, and I think you can see it when watching a movie, is Zack Snyder's fingerprints, because Zack Snyder, along with two dudes, wrote the screenplay. And
he only gets a story credit, so who knows what that actually means.
Right. Okay, so Patty Jenkins did say recently in an interview, I think with the Hollywood Reporter, that they set out to make the movie they wanted to make, and they only reshot one scene, which was in the original screenplay to begin with. So they actually shot this thing page by page, storyboard by storyboard, exactly how they wanted to shoot it. So she got the movie that she wanted to make. So I'm just going to put it out there. But what I mean by that is when you come to the third act, like, I have this huge problem these days with movies in the third act. It's a reoccurring theme on this podcast. I had a huge problem with Guardians of the Galaxy 2 when it came to the third act. And in this movie, it's the same. And I don't want to get into it just yet because that would spoil the movie and a story. So I'll just wait a bit. But I love this movie for so many reasons. First of all, it's so unusual for a Hollywood action blockbuster, especially a movie about a superhero or based on a comic book. You have an international cast. The movie, and this is not a knock to any of my American friends, but it's refreshing that the movie doesn't take place in, say, New York City or Los Angeles. Like, it's so un-American in that way. And like, you know, Chris Pine is an American in the movie. Like, he plays an American spy, but it takes place in Europe, and you have, again, this international cast. So I like the diversity. I like the fact that it's not like the Wonder Woman TV show where she's wearing like high heels and she spins whenever she needs her lasso and her superpowers, and it's so, so terrible, right? The opening sequence, well, actually, I should say the opening 30 minutes of this movie, I think, is the best 30 minutes of any DC movie, hands down. And that includes like the original Christopher Reeve Superman movies. The problem is that the first 30 minutes is so good that for the next 2 hours, I kept wishing we were back at her home. I loved just the scenery. Like, you guys are right, the colors, the cinematography, it's bright, it had humor, it was funny, it was light, it was completely different than the recent DC comic movies that we got. Once again, refreshing. Loved it. I love the first action scene, the first battle sequence, the way it was staged and choreographed. Dudes, that's like the best action battle scene in any superhero movies since God, I don't know what. Like, I can't think of any. Like, I love Captain America, and you're right. The plot, like the story of this movie, is so similar to Captain America. But I think they actually do a better job in this movie with Chris Pine's character and his character arc. Like, you're totally right, Patrick. His character arc is beautifully, like, just fleshed out. But that opening battle sequence was amazing. The second battle sequence, when they go into no man's land. Okay, I went to the movie theater.
We tried.
Oh my God. Okay, so I was telling Simon that I went on a Sunday night during, like, you know, there's basketball playoffs and hockey playoffs and The Leftovers and Twin Peaks and American Gods. And so we figured it would be pretty empty. And it was. There was about like 3 or 4 people in the theater. And I swear to God, I felt the emotion. Like, I felt those people tearing up. Like, there was just so much raw emotion in that scene. Like, it was amazing for it's not like Saving Private Ryan. It's not technically a war film, although it sort of is, but there's just something that she gave this movie, like the director and the actress. And I think that's why I like this movie so much. You know, when we think of like Iron Man, right? I've always said on the podcast that Robert Downey Jr. deserves his $50 million a movie, because he pretty much like started the DC universe. Like, he's the one that made it a success, because it was so important to cast him properly, like Tony Stark in that first movie. And everyone liked that first Iron Man movie because of the casting of Robert Downey Jr. And since then, Marvel has just been unstoppable, right? Gal Gadot is amazing. This is like the best casting of any superhero since Christopher Reeves. And I would put her, like, you know, Michael Keaton was great as Batman. You know, there's a few good ones here and there. Robert Downey Jr. has Tony Stark, clearly. But Gal Gadot, I think, is by far the greatest casting choice for a superheroine or superhero, whatever. Like, I mean, like, you would think, again, Hollywood, and this is what I mean about how I admire this movie so much. Like, you would think that they would just go with a typical Hollywood actress and or British actress. But no, they go with Gal Gadot. She's incredible. I love the way
she's also a million feet tall. I mean, if,
but you know, the way she commands the screen, like, I could not take my eyes off of her. Like, she has so much presence. Like, she is powerful. And so for me, she's the reason why the movie worked from the start to the finish, despite my problems with the third act and the silly twist and the God of War and who's playing the God of War and the terrible effects in the third act. I have a huge problem with the last, like, say, 20 minutes of this movie, but it's just not enough for it to be a deal breaker for me, because what came before, like the 2 hours that came prior, I thought was like the best thing DC's done since Richard Donner directed Superman movies. So, you know, it's not a pitch perfect movie. I'm not in love with the movie, but there's things about it that I love. And I, again, it's a Hollywood film, and it doesn't feel like a Hollywood film. It feels like, at times, it feels like some of those like sword and sandal movies from like the 70s. And just everything about like these characters, like, it was just so odd to see like what's his face from Trainspotting show up. I was like, what? Like, weird casting choices. And I forget her name, but she's fantastic. The lady.
Lucy Davis.
Yeah, to play the secretary, right? Is that her? Oh my God. Yes. I was like,
AKA the female lead from The Office, now reduced to doddering middle-aged supporting actress.
No, but listen, I needed more of her. But I will say this, okay? Had I written and or directed this movie and or helped write the movie and or something, had some sort of like input when I'm sitting in like, you know, the room and everyone's pitching ideas, I would have said, you know what, guys, you know what would be freaking amazing? If one of the characters in a movie that doesn't have superpowers is actually a woman and ends up being like a hero. That would have been the perfect movie for me, because I like Chris Pine. He's really charming. I think he's like the best of the three Chrises, I think, like, between Thor and what's his face, Human Torch, and Captain America, who's the same dude. I think Chris Pine is actually the most charismatic. He's actually kind of cool.
He's the best Chris.
But here's the thing. Had they replaced one of those men with like a lady character, like, I think this movie would be even better. I would have loved to have seen, I would have loved to have seen a female character in this movie that didn't have superpowers that was also a hero. But I do like the relationship, like Patrick, like you said, she sort of forms a team, and it doesn't really become about Wonder Woman. That's actually what I liked about the movie. Like, that's what I loved about the movie. And the thing is, last thing I'm going to say before Simon or whoever cuts in, is when you talk about how she kills people, I actually love that part of the movie too, because she's born and raised to be a warrior. You know, she's not like Superman. She's not like Batman. She's like, and it is a coming of age film, but she is a warrior. So it makes sense for her to go out and actually kill. Now, the thing is, you can't criticize the movie for being problematic in the way it portrays like World War One. I kind of felt like at times I was watching World War Two with the way they were portraying like the Germans and the British. And it was just weird. But I do like the fact that she was killing, because that's kind of like what her character is in the original comic.
There were a couple points where I was actually bemoaning the PG-13 rating, because I felt like there would have been just that much more gravitas and that much more emotional impact if there was a little bit of gore. In two places in particular, one... I guess seeing the men on the front or coming back from the front. And I mean, you know, obviously we all understand that World War One was just the worst. But it would have, a little bit more shock would have made Diana's reaction read, I think, more with the audience. And the final scene where she kills the colonel guy, spoilers. if we had actually...
That's not how spoiler tags work, Mariko.
If we had actually seen the blood dripping from the sword, like, how chilling would that have been?
So my only problem with the killing thing, don't get me wrong, I liked, you know, the way the action played out in many cases, but it was in such stark contrast to her ideology that she was sort of preaching, you know, this, you know, how can you guys be at war with each other and killing each other? What's wrong with mankind? I will go out and murder half of you. And by the way, like, these Germans, they were portrayed like Nazis, even though they weren't. They were never given a fair shake. It was like, oh, well, you guys shouldn't be killing each other. Here, I'll go kill a bunch of you, and hopefully this will stop, and I won't feel bad about it at all. I'll be saving other people, but killing other guys who, I don't know,
she didn't inherently kill anybody in No Man's Land. She deflected bullets, but she didn't actually kill anybody. The only person she killed was the person who she believed was actually the God of War.
No. She killed that sniper in that bell tower by collapsing an entire building on top of
him. Okay, well,
there were other deaths too.
No, we presume he didn't make it alive, but we don't know if she actually killed him.
Oh, she totally killed that guy. And it was
like
supposed to be
never kills anybody, right? Yeah.
It's supposed to be a rah-rah moment, but at the same time, she's like, "What's wrong with you people? Why are you killing each other?" And it just rang false for me. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Gal Gadot acted her butt off here. I think she was hung out to dry sometimes by the direction and, you know, the insistence on striking Wonder Woman poses for the fans. But I think she also was sort of left to a screenplay that didn't quite understand the character very well and wanted to be cool and yet also have a message. Like, you can kind of only be one or the other.
I still really do not think she killed anybody.
I don't know.
I kept saying about the tower, but for all we know, she has superpowers. She could have, like, crashed a tower and saved the person. I think, like, when you actually see her, like, but no, Simon, this is actually kind of, like, a really good point Patrick brings up, but to see her, like, in frame actually kill someone, we only see it one time, and it's when she kills who she thinks is the God of War. Now, she does kill the guy, but she thought he was the God of War. So it's different because she is the God killer. Like, I mean, that's the thing. You
gotta remember. That's definitely how murder works. Killer. I thought it was someone
else. She didn't feel bad about him. I mean, she didn't feel bad about killing that guy. You know, in the comics, and I know this because I recently read Logan's top 10 Wonder Woman moments in the comics. She killed one person that I'm aware of in the comics. She killed a guy that had been taking control of Superman. And she felt awful about it. And it was a big moment because it was the first time she ever actually killed anybody. But she did it to stop Batman Superman and Batman from killing each other. So she thought she was basically doing it for the greater good. She had to pick one or the other. Either one of her superhero friends dies or this evil guy dies. And that was supposed to be a big moment, a big choice for her. And it kind of led to the disintegration of the Justice League because of that. She was kicked out of it and it sort of fell apart after that. So from something like that, how her character was in the comics, from what I understand, or at least from our, you know, comic book expert at Goomba Stomp wrote it, that seems like a big departure in this where, okay, she killed a bad guy and whatever. Oh, I got the wrong guy. Oops. All right, let's move on to the next one.
Well, I also kind of feel like her reaction here is, related to her kind of naivete.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, like, all of the preamble on the island is about her wanting to be a warrior and her mom being like, yeah, chill out, kid. And so, you know, she goes out there and she's going to be a warrior. And yeah. And this is year one. This is where, you know, she does go too far. And she realizes that things are more complicated. And
But Patrick, there's been like multiple times where she's killed someone in the comic book, like multiple times. Like I first of all, everyone should check out Logan's List over at GoombaStomp.com because it's fantastic. And that dude knows his comic books. But there's been like so many times where she's had to kill somebody. Like, I mean, when the Nazis invaded her homeland, like, I think she killed people. Like, didn't she kill like Hitler or something? And like, she killed Huntress. Like, there's times in a comic book where, because the thing is, there's been like several Wonder Woman comics written by several different writers, and they all portray her differently. In recent comics, especially with like, you know, like the after like the 90s, like characters like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, like, no, they do not kill. But I mean, at the same time, I don't necessarily need the movie to be exactly like the comic. Simon, you want to cut in like 20 minutes ago? What's up?
All right. Well, since you love the movie and Mariko loved the movie, now I feel like I have license to be a little bit more of a dick about this. So I'm just going to crack my knuckles and
how you really
crack open this beer. Yeah. No, I'm not going to be that big a dick. But there are some aspects of, and again, I can't totally fault the movie for this, but there are things about the discussion around the movie, as well as the movie itself, that I feel like just point out how impoverished film discourse is right now. First of all, I think it's completely stupid and ridiculous that it wasn't until Wonder Woman, and again, I'm talking about like recent-ish cinematic universe era of superhero movies, that it wasn't until someone was making a Wonder Woman movie that fans stood up and were like, we want a female director. Like, what is this idea that, you know, only when you have a female main character is it important that you have a female director or a female writer, which this movie doesn't have. Like, this notion of, like, men should do men's movies and women should do men's movies is reductive and juvenile and makes me feel icky.
I don't think that's
the
point, though. I think a lot of people were just asking that because it's like the first time Wonder Woman is getting her own movie after 75 years. They would have preferred a female director. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I do agree that, you know, women should be directing like Captain America Civil War Part 15, you know, or I don't know, Incredible Hulk Part like 20. Like,
yeah,
I agree
just with
that. Yeah, don't wait for She-Hulk to give it to a female director.
She might not be interested, but I'm just kind of shocked that Kathryn Bigelow has not directed a superhero movie at this point.
I don't think she's interested.
I don't think she's interested, and she would, I mean, she would obviously kill whatever.
Remind everyone really quickly that there was a movie called Tank Girl that starred a female comic book character and was directed by a woman. And I actually like that movie. Simon, I know you hate it, but I like that movie.
I've never actually seen it. I was just saying we had a conversation about it, and I said, you know, that's true. That movie does exist, but nobody's watched it since 1998.
But I mean, I think it's telling that in this context, we came up with the name of one female action director.
Yeah.
I think the important part about asking for a woman for this movie to me is the fact that it is an action film, and that studios just cannot get their heads around a woman directing an action movie, which is ridiculous.
I mean, there are plenty of female directors from the world of television. I'm thinking, obviously, of people like Leslie Linka Glatter, some other Breaking Bad creatives as well. Even Mimi Leder, who's been working on stuff like The Leftovers. Like, I see no reason that she couldn't direct an incredible action film.
It's weird how in the television landscape, like, the female directors tend to, like, shine, and there's no problem with them letting them direct, like, say, like, episode 9 of, like, Game of Thrones or, like, the biggest episode of Breaking Bad. But with Hollywood, when it comes to making these Hollywood blockbuster films, it's not like that, Simon. Like, that is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a general thing about the discourse that just pisses me off that I just wanted to get out of the way. The other thing is, like, okay, I can accept that people are refreshed at the fact that this is a movie with a female superhero lead. I can also acknowledge that it's never going to mean as much to me as it is to as it as it's going to mean to people like Mariko, so there's just a dimension that I'm never going to appreciate. But it just would have been nice if this movie were a little bit less sort of fascistic and dishonest about violence and as bleak and, you know, it has all the same ideological problems as every Zack Snyder superhero movie. It claims to have this message about love at the end, but like, honestly, you could remove every mention of love being the solution to the world's problems with the word punching, and it would have been more honest.
Absolutely. If it didn't preach the love, then I mean, I like the action scenes. I have no problem with her killing people. Just don't start telling me that mankind is bad as you're beating the living hell out of them.
I mean, like, this is what really bothered me about the movie is I felt like there was a missed opportunity to do something. Like, it felt different only on a surface level, where they had a chance to do something ideologically distinct from, you know, other superhero movies and not just tell, like, another Ubermensch story. And they kind of just literally did that again. And, like...
I don't know. I get what you're saying.
That movie's never going to happen.
No. And the thing is, that's my problem, like, with the movie too, Simon, especially in the second half of the film, like, especially the third act. Like, but like, okay, if you go like, this movie's long, it's like, what, 2 hours and 30 minutes long, right?
It's 2 and a quarter.
Okay, so let's say at the hour mark, right? After, for example, like, the best scene in the movie is when she's trying on the dresses. And she's like, that. I thought that scene was just hilarious and charming. But, like, when you get to the hour mark, I mean, you do have the no man's land scene, which, like, I've already raved about, which is great. But it does become sort of like a typical superhero movie. And, like, I'm not going to disagree with what you're saying, but... Like Mariko said, that's not going to happen. I mean, I'm amazed we even got this movie. Like, what you're asking for, that's something that's going to happen in the next, like, 50 years. And I, like, look, if I wrote and directed this movie, I would have been like, okay, Wonder Woman's going to be like, fuck this shit.
That would have been an awesome movie, by the way. And it would have given her character something that it lacked, which was complexity. She didn't really have any shades. And the best Marvel movies, don't get me wrong, not every Marvel movie has this. And most of them are just sort of, you know... boilerplate, but the best Marvel movie characters have some sort of shades to them where they are dealing with complex emotions, and hopefully that will happen to her eventually. But in this one, she was just a babe in the woods, and ultimately that's not very interesting as a character, which is why they obviously had to give Chris Pine's character so much more to do. And that's what ultimately disappoints me. I don't try to surround myself with, you know, what Wonder Woman represents, or, you know, the character and what she means to people. I'm just looking at the movie, and I saw a movie where the main character, who I'm supposed to get behind, was one of the least interesting characters in the movie, unfortunately, except for when she was a little girl. And then she was completely like, that was absolutely fascinating and charming, and I wish it would have paid off at some point. But instead, she just sort of becomes this, you know, naive person who wanders through and maybe learns a little bit about the world, but nothing really impactful. And Pine's character has the real emotional arc, and that's where sort of the heart of the movie lies, when it should lie with your main character. That's my real problem with it. I did find it charming ultimately. Like, I liked this movie, but...
Can I just add that, like, I like the opening of the movie, and I think it's my favorite part of the movie, but, like, if you guys like that, there was this TV show called Xena, which this was basically an expensive version of. So, like, I'm not gonna pretend that it was, like, some unprecedented cinematic genius. Like, it was good, campy fun in a slightly unorthodox setting, but, like, definitely nothing I've
seen for sure before. But what I'm saying is that this movie, like, I mean, I said this on Slack, and I don't know if our writers of our Goomba Stomp thought I was, like, joking around, but I was being sincere and honest when I said that this movie sort of started to fall apart once we had men, like, once the men showed up, because, like, it was just such an interesting movie at the beginning, and I would have wanted to see that movie, like, Wonder Woman surrounded by her people, and, like, and just forget about World War One. And the thing is, like, I'm not even joking, Patrick, when I said that that's the kind of movie I would write. Like, I've said this before on the podcast when I think we reviewed Man of Steel, and it was, like, one of the most interesting Superman stories I've ever read was when Superman just decided not to use his powers, and he just walked from the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States. He went on this long road trip, and every time he had to help someone, he wouldn't do it using his superpowers. Like, he was really depressed, and I think it was after Lois Lane died. I can't remember. But it was a fantastic, fantastic, like, storyline. And, you know, like, when I talk about, like, her killing in the comic books and having more of a complex character, more of an interesting, like, plot line or story to work with. Like, I understand that this is an origin story, but, like, there was one time in a comic book where she, like, beheaded somebody. Like, she beheaded Medusa. You know, like, I guess the thing is, it's like, it's once again, we're dealing with an origin story, right? And, but I just think, I guess what I'm trying to say here is, again, I'm not in love with this movie. I like the movie a lot. There's things that I love about it, like the main actress. But I just... I admire the movie because it is completely different than what we've seen over the past, like, say, 10, 15 years that's come out of, like, especially the DC universe, you know? I think I've said this many times on the podcast, and I'll say it again. Like, the last great comic book movie was, I think, Spider-Man, directed by, like, Sam Raimi, like, the second one. Yeah. I do love Captain America, like, all three films. I don't know if I'll go so far as to call them great. I think they're really good and really entertaining. But when I think of, like, great superhero movies, I'm thinking of, like, the original Superman movie, not the original, but the one with Christopher Reeves. And I'm thinking of, like, The Dark Knight. I'm thinking of Spider-Man 2, directed by Sam Raimi. And even something like Darkman, directed by Sam Raimi. But you know, like, I think, like, you had, like, it's weird because, like, I feel like the more money these movies make, the dumber they become, or, like, the more processed they become. Like, they all become so similar. Like, they're prepackaged and they have, like, a formula. And I just, like, I don't understand it. Like, I mean, like, so, like, why aren't these movies getting better? And, like, sometimes they do get better sometimes with the special effects and action scenes, but not really. Like, I'm sorry, but the Spider-Man movies that came out after Sam Raimi's movies do not look better than his movies, and not even the action scenes are better than the action scenes that he gave us.
No, but, you know, the same.
Well, you got the impression with, like, the early Raimi Spider-Man movies of, like, movies that were made slightly less by committee. And I would even say Spider-Man 3 was a movie that was clearly not made by committee, because there were parts of it that were just so ill-advised that, like, clearly there wasn't, like, the level of oversight that there should have been. And those are, like, as much as people like to hate on movies like that, like, that's what I sort of miss happening in, like, the new breed of superhero movies from what I've seen, because I've missed a lot of them. Like, I miss those sort of, like, grace notes and things that that seem to come out of left field and, like, don't seem to really work in a way that, you know, you might expect. And I don't know, like, I wish that a movie like Fury Road was like the average blockbuster, like, where that's, like, roughly the level of invention and excitement that you expect, and then anything above that is just gravy. Instead, we've settled for this extremely, it's filmmaking by committee. Every third act is identical. We have these allowances, like, oh, it's an origin story. Oh, it's the first film for this character. Oh, they have, you know, certain beats they have to hit. Oh, like, but we don't make these sorts of allowances for other kinds of movies. I don't see why we should make it for these. And I think it's depressing that we make these sorts of allowances. Not to specifically attack you, Mariko, because I know this is a character you're excited about seeing, and I can appreciate that in the abstract, even if I don't really understand it. But I don't know. I wish that we didn't settle for things. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Okay, that we should probably stop right there. We lost Rick.
Now, hold on, Ricky. You're on speaker. I just want you to explain to everyone who's listening what happened.
Okay, what do you mean, like, on the podcast live?
Yeah, right now.
Okay, well, the power went out because God does not want me to talk about a goddess. Seriously, like, you guys can pick this up, so why can't I just continue doing a show like this?
Because you're going to sound like shit.
That's it. Follow me on Twitter, Sort of Cinema, and I'll talk to you guys next week when we review Baby Driver, I think?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening.
No, actually, we're going to...
It comes at night. That's what we're doing. Baby
Driver. You're right.
All right. Ciao, Mariko and Patrick.
All right.
Take care.
We're supposed to record our Nintendo podcast tonight. I take it that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to segue back into the actual podcast now. God, I feel bad for him editing this. Anyway, whoop whoop.
By the way, I did not actually hate this movie. I found it like to be on the positive side of things, but you know, kind of, I found it pleasant enough. I guess I was just disappointed in its that it, like, Simon, you and I have been almost exactly on the exact same page. Like, I don't think I could. We're thinking the same thoughts on a lot of this stuff.
That's weird.
It's just that my level of disappointment wasn't as great, I guess. But other than that, my complaints are exactly the same. Like, I just thought it was that they're not reaching for anything. At least with those Spider-Man movies, you felt the love behind the project. Like, this person actually wanted to make not just a superhero movie, but a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, I got that feeling from this, that it was a Wonder Woman movie. I definitely felt that way.
I didn't feel the love. It didn't feel as prepackaged as a lot of the Marvel ones do, because I think DC is still, they still are experimenting a little bit. Marvel's got it down to a science. But I didn't feel like, I'd like for somebody to take an artistic chance too. You know, like Raimi did with a movie like Darkman and Spider-Man 2, where he kind of went a little gonzo. Yeah, went Sam Raimi on that movie and showed some auteurship that we haven't seen a whole lot of in other superhero movies.
You know, I do hold these types of movies up to a very different scale than I would a regular film. And I understand that that's, you know, not, you know, it's sad that we have to do that to a certain degree. But on the other hand, you know, for what it was and what it was trying to do, I felt like they did a much better job than anyone else in DC, in the DC cinematic universe, has done to this point. So. I mean, It held up as a film.
Yes. And it was its own movie.
You know, it's a low bar, but I do feel like it surpassed it to a point that I was satisfied.
The real, like, auteur behind this movie was, like, Suicide Squad for putting everyone's expectations so low that just, like, a cogent movie was gold straight to your face.
Leaped on cough syrup.
You know, the thing is...
That is the only way to ever watch Suicide Squad, I gotta tell you.
I feel like comic movies used to be a place where filmmakers could experiment and have a little bit of fun. Like, I would have loved to have seen Brian De Palma shoot a comic book movie in his prime. He kind of did with The Untouchables.
There were a lot of visual things that I really enjoyed in this. Like, you know how everyone comes onto a comic book movie for the first time and they have to find some shitty way of, like, emulating comic book panels or movement or that sort of thing. And like, okay, yeah, it's not new, it's the Snyder pen in slow-mo, but I like the way it was done here. I felt like it really gave a fresh feeling of movement that I hadn't really seen before, maybe just because I avoid Zack Snyder movies on principle.
this is where I feel like I do this annually whenever I get suckered into doing a superhero movie once a year, but this is where I will once again defend the Ang Lee Hulk.
Thank
for
you.
Like, its insane take.
Yes. Yes, at least tried for something.
I'm a huge fan of that movie.
It was better than the Edward.
Yeah, I mean, that movie is
marijuana, so to me it's a film about child abuse and subtext. Anything literal from the movie, I completely ignore.
Well, except for the fact that it's got Nick Nolte as a fucking cloud.
Okay, yeah, that was a special kind of great.
Anyway, yeah, and I don't know. I think about that. I think about, you know, Edgar Wright getting kicked off of Ant-Man.
Oh, man.
I think about...
Which turned into just a big sarcasm fest, which was fine, but it was, again, it was just another Marvel movie. It was like Iron Man's little brother.
I was so disappointed with that movie.
Yeah, I didn't
see it. I've been numbed to Marvel movies at this point. They're all, other than a few exceptions, they all kind of seem the same. Logan was an exception, and I think...
Logan blew my mind.
The second Captain America I thought was an actual good movie as opposed to just being a good superhero movie. But other than that, I can't really think of any standouts.
The simple version seems to be what happened was, you know, as soon as the Marvel Cinematic Universe kicked into gear, as soon as, you know, the capital was set aside to really start to make that a thing. And by the way, just to call back to something Ricky said about Robert Downey Jr. earning the $50 million. No one deserves $50 million for anything. The only war I accept is class war. All right, I'm done for that. Anyway, as soon as that the capital kicked in, you know, these companies had to protect their investments, and that meant they could only, you know, accept a certain amount of risk. And that meant that they, you know, any, you know, the biggest chance that they took was getting Shane Black for Iron Man 3, which A, paid off, and B, was only able to happen because, you know, of the, because it was directly tied to their biggest, you know, individual cash cow. So yeah, you're right, guys, that we're not going to get the things that I want, out of a movie like Wonder Woman. But you know, again, I think that that's, it's the system I hate, not Wonder Woman.
The thing is, DC has a chance because they're still kind of figuring out their place in all this. Marvel's a machine at this point. Now, you'd think that they'd have enough money where they could finally experiment again and maybe try to come up with something different. They can't keep producing the same movie over and over again. I like to tell myself that anyway. But DC, I'd love for them to try to experiment with different things, sort of the same way that Marvel did early on. They let Sam Raimi have a little bit more free reign when it came to Spider-Man, and he could put his own style to it. Oh, that was Sony. You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was absolutely
Marvel films.
Marvel still had to license the property out to Sony. I'm sure there was some sort of, like, you know, how the character can be portrayed. It was before Disney bought Marvel, and now, of course, it's the Disney.
It's before the Marvel films, and they have, like, their czar of continuity and whatnot.
Right.
So, yeah.
And, you know, that whole thing is what has destroyed superhero movies. It's this creation of a universe. That it makes it almost like a television show where you can't alter the style too much. Everything sort of has to look the same. So nobody can put their own little flourishes on it. Nobody can really try anything different. And before, you know, those superhero movies, you know, we were talking during the break about the Ang Lee's Hulk, which at least tried to be different. Ang Lee tried to, he experimented a little bit, which was great. You could get comic book movies and you didn't know what you were going to see. You didn't know what they were going to try. And that was fun. Now it's just basically like, I don't know, you're just going to a popcorn movie that's going to be the same movie over and over again with the same special effects over and over again and the same story over and over again.
But there's ladies this time.
There was one lady. Well, two. Then they didn't even make the other girl the main villain. They had a great opportunity to do that.
I really like that. I have to say, I actually really like that because since the trailers, I was like, oh, right, they have to put a woman in so she could fight a woman at the end, because everyone knows if you have a female superhero, then obviously her final fight has to be with that evil super woman, because it's, I don't know, girls fighting. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that at all.
They didn't even make her the second tier villain. She was third tier.
And I loved it.
No way, man. I wanted to see.
I mean, it was so small and so subtle, but it, like, again, like, you know, expectations so low and being spoon-fed the pablum, like, you make a small twist like that, and I was like, yeah!
Okay, can I ask you, Mariko, all right, so you're the head of DC Films, mm-hmm. whatever. You are Steve Nugent, you are Zack Snyder, you are Deborah Snyder, you are Patty Jenkins, whatever. You are all these people somehow. You get to do a Wonder Woman movie however the fuck you feel like it. What would that movie be like?
So I think what I would want to see, actually, if we're doing like a big blockbuster sequel movie, I want to see Atlantis. Atlantis. versus Themyscira. I want to see Amazons versus Merfolk. I want to see Wonder Woman versus Mara. I don't know if they've cast her yet, if she's in the, I have no idea, but she's very often a foil for Wonder Woman in the comics because she's one of the few women who's actually can hold her own against Wonder Woman. And I think it could be really fun to have some awesome actress, you know, of a certain age, get real camp up in there. I think that would be really super fun.
Yeah, and they should probably cast, like, an actress of a certain age who can actually do stunts and stuff, because I was really distracted by the fact that, like, when in the Robin Wright scenes, like, Robin Wright can do a steely glare with the best of them, but it was very clear, like, there were no clear shots of her doing anything, which was kind of distracting to me.
I thought they did that for Wonder Woman herself. I mean, Gadot is obviously athletic, but I felt like some of her movements were a little awkward, and the filmmakers maybe suspected this as well, because a lot of the action scenes she's shot from behind, it's clearly a stunt woman.
She was 6 months pregnant through a lot of the action. They actually had to green screen her tummy.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense then.
Yeah.
What? That, which is like really ironic if you consider the tummy dialogue in this movie.
Yeah.
Simon, what would your ultimate Wonder Woman be?
Okay, it would have had the same first like 35 minutes as this movie, except after she has the scene on the boat where she's telling Chris Pine where, you know, they have these volumes of books about sex that explain to them that men are functionally useless. The rest of the movie actually goes on to like, prove that, and she never bones Chris Pine. All the male characters die. She destroys imperialist heteropatriarchy and actually does establish a female world order.
That's my new gynocracy.
Nothing gets solved until they actually reject capitalism, because that is the evil. That would
knew
be
you'd
movie.
Be working that in there somehow.
Because we all know that women are capable of evil just as much as anyone else. Anyway, so that's my Wonder Woman.
That would be a more...
Give me $500 million.
I would like to see that movie on the big screen. I would hope that it would have more, you know, board meetings and things like that, government meetings than actual action scenes, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hard R for revolution. No. Anyway, it's I'm sorry, everyone.
Oh, no.
So this has been our review and speculative fiction for the DC Studios film Wonder Woman. As previously mentioned, next week we are planning on reviewing the new horror film It Comes at Night. Little bit later than that, Baby Driver. We hope the following episodes will be less of a hot mess than this one was. Hopefully all of our technical issues are sorted out. Rico, if people want to find you on the Twitter or any other places online, where can they find you?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Mariko McDonald, all one word. If you want to look at the blog that I don't update anymore, you can go to gamerwife.com.
Hooray!
No, I don't update it anymore because I have a real job and I don't have time.
Right. I was just picturing the gamer divorce blog. God. That must exist by now. Anyway, I'm on Twitter at Hollow Minds, and Patrick, you run the NXpress podcast Twitter. And yeah, do visit us over at Sorted Cinema, or aka Goomba Stomp. And also do check out The Lodgers, which is the excellent Twin Peaks podcast that I do with Kate Renabom. I get to call it excellent because Kate Renabom is on it. We are obviously keeping track of the new season and having a blast doing it. We've been hearing from lots of people, and it's been a huge blast, and that'll be up again later this week. And that's it from us. Thank you, Mariko, for joining us. Thank you, Ricky, although you're not here with us anymore. Thank you, Patrick. We'll be back next week.
Everyone.